You're listening to Arsenal Pass, a flesh and blood podcast for players by players, and all about strategy, leveling up, and the latest news in the world of Wraith. Welcome to Arsenal Pass.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to episode 161 of Arsenal Pass. Hayden Dale here with Mr. Brendan Patrick. Brendan, I believe for those audio and YouTube listeners, let us know how the intro music is. We got some feedback that maybe the intro music was a bit higher. So I honestly think that that's not the case, Brendan. I think 161 episodes, 3 years down the track, people have just started listening to the intro and they're getting hyped up. That's what I'm hearing.
I think the people, I wouldn't be surprised if it was high. I've listened to it before and I've also turned it down, I think, in the past. I mean, it depends how you listen. If you listen on your speakers, it's totally fine. But I guess if you're in earphones, like, it could be a lot. So yeah, we're trying to tone it back a bit. We also changed the overlay, so the overlay is blue. But the background, Hayden doesn't know this, is also blue. Because funny enough, I had like a color inverted version of the Arsenal Pass picture, like already on my desktop.
That's so funny.
I think it was for limited time only. Not limited time only. A time of the round. So
oh, nice.
Yeah. It's like a blue version of that.
Yeah. Well, we've done this. If people haven't picked this up, if you're a YouTube viewer of the pod, every season we actually change up the overlay to match the color of the new set. So obviously a nice deep brown for heavy hitters. We've gone to a nice ephemeral kind of blue for for this set. And Part of the Mistfell, I mean, we're going to talk about Part of the Mistfell today because there's been a bunch of cards that have dropped from the Blitz decks, also including some videos that Alice has put out for the Blitz decks. And we're like, as this pod drops, we're a week away from the world premiere, which is, I'm going to be there. I'm super excited heading to Tokyo. And some of these cards are pretty sick. So I'm pretty keen to talk about how the heroes fit in. And I guess, yeah, we're going to talk today on the pod, first look at Part of the Mistfell and some early thoughts on the heroes, the cards we're seeing, things like that. But the intro, the overlay. Also, I got a shout out. One of my favorite things that kind of happened over my time at LA. I don't know whether they're just, you know, they're poking fun or they're just a bit of banter with the boys, but I love it either way, is all the Canadians always just saying, "You're listening to," just taking up the pod intro, and it kind of gets me every time. So
I mean, the pod intro is ridiculous. Like, it is just absurdism at its finest. Like, I don't know. It's just iconic. It just is what it is at this point. Like, that's the pod intro we've had since, like, the beginning. And yeah, I think it's maybe not a modern podcast intro, but it's an intro at that. So,
all right. Week in Flesh and Blood, or just week in general, I guess. You know, we've kind of coming off the back of a ProQuest season. I'll kick it off. I actually, unfortunately, didn't get to play a ProQuest this season. I've been traveling, just got back over the weekend. But there's been some events happening. There's been, I guess, you know, we talked about kind of state of the meta over the couple of weeks ago. We talked about kind of these rogue decks that have been popping up, and this meta still seems to be super diverse. So you know, I didn't get to bust out Reinhard this time, but we've got obviously Tokyo coming up, and there's Calling this weekend, Brendan, if you know that. So I'm sure there's coverage for Calling Warsaw this weekend. And then we're quickly like moving towards national season, which is kind of insane, to be honest.
Yeah, I was my past 3 weeks have been rough. Like, I actually finished my antibiotics yesterday. So like, I got sick, I got better. I kind of didn't feel sick. I got sick. And then like, I don't know. And then eventually I needed antibiotics. I had like a double ear infection. Oh, like, yeah, it sucked.
For a man that never gets sick,
that was pretty bad. That was pretty bad. I mean, I really held off on the antibiotics. I think that's like, I don't know. At one point in my life, I'd been overprescribed them and they really fucked me up. Like, it sucked. So I was hesitant to accept. But ultimately, I had to after being sick for like 15 days.
Yeah, I'd get on that. I want to talk. Let's talk about, you know, playing Flesh and Blood. And Brendan got really excited. He was telling me that he's seen his new favorite card previewed with Kindle. I don't know if you've even seen Kindle. So obviously, we have a lot of things to talk about for Part of the Mistfell. But there's also been, you know, these expansion slots cards that have been previewed as well. So we've seen, we talked about some the other week, Visit Goldman Estate. We talked about Visit the Golden Anvil. So these Victor and Olympia specializations. There's been a Riptide specialization shown. There's been this quite cool Ranger Arms, long draw, half glove. But there's also been this little wizard card, and we know Brendan Patrick. You know, he's easily, you know, he's predictable. Anytime a wizard card comes out, he's going to tell you it's broken. It's the next best thing. It's a broken combo.
That's what Brendan was telling me about this one. I do not do that. I was looking at the We Make Best thumbnail before this, and I was like, geez, it's like, this is, how could they print this? So Kindle is a wizard instant at Majestic. It's a zero cost red pitch. It says amp one. So, new keyword. Next time you would deal arcane damage this turn, instead deal that much plus one. This happens before prevention effects, if you have no cards in hand. And then the text on this is, if you have no cards in hand, draw a card.
Mm. What do you think of this card?
I don't know. I have to really wrap my head around amp one. First off, I think that, you know, having, if you have no cards in hand, draw a card, like something that just inherently cantrips in something like Kano, is super powerful. Mm-hmm. Let me think about it. Like,
all right, we'll come back to you next time.
I mean,
you
what
how,
like,
how broken it is.
I mean, I don't know. Like, you have to sell me the dream here, because I didn't immediately see it when I saw the card.
Okay, so I think the challenge to this card is, obviously it's an instant. It's not a non-attack action, yes. So you can't Kano this card off the top of your deck. I think that's the first thing to talk about. So I think obviously that makes it difficult to play maybe Kano in a style of. I kind of see, so I think there's two schools of thought on Kano right now. There's this kind of like, play how you draw first cycle, kind of almost, you know, deterministic kind of, sorry, non-deterministic way of playing the deck, right, of what comes up, versus this deterministic kind of pitch stack way of getting to an end game, right? There's kind of two schools, and we talked about that last week with Kano, and I think Kindle is probably going to fall into that more kind of than known, because if you try to, you know, flip cards off the top and find certain pieces to find you lines and explore lines and find a known, this adds an unknown like eye or like energy potion that could kind of, you know, ruin what you're trying to do. So I think obviously in that regard, Kindle is another, you know, unknown that you get into the deck. But if you're playing this kind of more deterministic combo style deck, maybe Kindle has a place, and maybe it's really powerful. I don't know. It's an interesting card. Yeah. It doesn't block. It's an instant. Yeah, it's red.
It is powerful. What's funny is that they may have printed the Zynus card before this like turbo pitch deck and Kano thing became popular. Because it really wasn't. Like, it was a niche strategy at best. But I saw a screenshot recently of Alexander Vore playing, and not only did he have three Wildfires banished and three Blazings banished, but his pitch zone looked like a deck. It looked like a deck. Like, it was over 10 cards.
So many cards.
Yeah. I was stimulated looking at that picture, in which case I think Kindle would be pretty decent in that scenario. But yeah, I mean,
potentially. I mean, it does add another, you know, it doesn't block. It does another card you need to pitch in. It's a red. Like, it's, you know, you can only pitch so many cards, and you do have to block.
No block is big, right? No block is big.
Yeah.
And it feels.
And do you even need it?
Yeah. It feels very incongruent with potentially like the first cycle thing, because like you can't, there's no way you could, I say there's no way, but maybe there's a way. But I feel like there's no way you can add another whiff in the deck, because like I was already bad enough. Like,
If you're playing in that kind of more traditional style, but let's look at this, right? So let's say you draw a hand, three blues and a Kindle. Okay, block with my three cards, play my Kindle. I cycle it out, draw another card that blocks and block that card. And I've gotten one card further down my deck. It's almost like playing Gorgonian Tome a little bit in some ways, except that I can do it at instant speed to block the card. Ooh, now how are you thinking about that?
Seems pretty distant. Maybe I should actually watch the We Make Best video instead of memeing on the thumbnail. But
exactly.
Yeah. I gotta give Kindle more of a thought. It's not. It doesn't immediately slot into like
how you kind of have played Kindle in the box.
Exactly.
Yeah. So
which is good. That's what we need. We can't add more cards that facilitate that style of gameplay, because it would just.
I agree.
Be broken.
We talked about Eloquent Eulogy and Shadowrun Horror last week, and kind of the strength of those cards. And I think they're very real. I think the one thing we didn't talk about was long draw half gloves. I want to quickly just touch on this. This is a Ranger Equipment Arms at Majestic. It defends one. It has Battle Worn and says instant. Destroy this. Put two cards from your hand and or arsenal on the bottom of your deck. Your next arrow attack this turn gets plus four. That's an instant. I really like this card. I don't know how. I mean, I think the arm slot is kind of weak. Because obviously, you know, Braces got banned. So it's like, you know, how... Wait, is Braces still banned? It is, right? Is it not? No, what am I talking about? No,
it's not. Sorry.
But that's the only strong arm piece. I just had a moment of like, wait, Lixie's brand, Lixie's Living Legend, right? This card's interesting, I think. You know, obviously it costs you two cards to get plus four. But you often, you know, if you're playing Death Dealer, you have to have extra cards. And if you're doing this to just, it's like a threat. Like the threat of activation is real, right? To push over a, you pop this, you play your next arrow and you get the +4. Like you having extra cards and having this kind of threat of how your opponent's going to hold defense reactions or try and line up their equipment for late in the game. I think this card's good. I like this card.
Yeah, I think the threat of activation is really tough to deal with in something like Azalea. Because, I mean, you can have some very nasty on hit effects in the arrows, but also in things like Seek and Destroy, some of those pumps can be very, very, like, you're very incentivized to block out sometimes if the arrow's not dominated, and this puts you in a pretty tough position, I feel like.
Yeah, it is your next arrow, so it's not like you, it's not like a true reaction, right? But you know, they just, they're having the ability to do this on like your second arrow, for instance, or like if you play, or just always being able to turn a Bolton shot on without needing a pump necessarily.
To be fair, I did misread. Yeah, I did misread it. Okay, it's a lot less powerful than I thought, but it's still powerful.
It's still really good, especially when you draw these hands where you draw the all arrow hand, the druided all arrow hand. And but maybe you have a Bolton shot ready to go, for instance, and you can kind of turn two arrows into a way to turn your Bolton shot into something. So anyway, we can move on, but I just think that card is interesting.
You don't want to talk about Murky Water?
I think we mentioned this briefly 2 weeks ago, did we not? If we can quickly talk about it though. So it's a ranger action arrow attack, majestic. It's red. It costs 2, attacks for 6 and defense for 3, and says Riptide Specialization. If this has an aim counter, it gets +1 and dominate. And when this hits, you may banish face down 3 traps from your graveyard. If you do, choose one at random and put it into your arsenal. I mean, so it's like a 2-cost, 6 attack. So like a Command & Conquer-esque, you know, template. And if it hits, you effectively draw a card. Kind of. A very specific card.
I think that'll push also Riptide.
Give it +1 and dominate. I mean, Riptide's clearly getting better, right? Riptide is winning events. It's clearly in a better position than it's been before. But yeah, how many Riptide specializations? There was a joke, you know, it's like, oh, at some point this will just be 30 Riptide specializations and 30 other cards, and then Riptide might Living Legend.
Yeah.
Now they've been printing.
They have to find a way to push Riptide and not break the game via Azalea.
This card's good, though.
Yeah.
Card's good.
I mean, it feels like a lot of these cards are good. I remember talking about Eloquent Eulogy, and like maybe we're less impressed with that one overall. But outside of that, I mean, let's just like, if we just look at this expansion slot, I mean, they're all bangers, right? They're all bangers. Shadowrun Horror, Kindle, of course, the Long Draw Half Glove we just talked about, but then Visit
the Golden Anvil?
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's also a hero that I've heard other people are more excited about it than me, but let's talk about where we're really visiting, Gold Main Estate. I mean, I think that card has the potential to actually push Victor. I think Victor's already very powerful, but can push Victor to new heights.
Victor might struggle into some of these new heroes, but yeah, maybe talk a bit about them. Let's go to the rest of the news. Armory Deck KO has released. There's been obviously a lot of discourse around the power of Sash. Is Sash as powerful as people think? Is Tunic just better? And Sash is clearly powerful, right? And we talked about it. We don't have to go over that card. We talked about that card a lot when the Armory Deck was first previewed. So Armory Deck's out now. I have been hearing, unfortunately, you know, some buyouts on some things and hard to get necessarily and whole things like that, but I think clearly, you know, I've had a lot of people actually showing up to armories, picking up this deck and, you know, grabbing a couple of wins and it being a nice gateway for players to jump in. I think KO is a good gateway because it's an easy hero to play for the most part, so seems like, you know, there's always going to be those when you put a new card in a product, right? Obviously, people are going to buy, ingrained players are going to buy it. But from what I'm hearing as well, that you know, new players are buying this product.
Yeah, so yeah. Good. I mean, that's why they did it. They did it so that entrenched.
Double down.
I mean, it was a decision for sure. But then I think it was simultaneously maybe not printed to the demand that the market ultimately had, which is where you see
that.
Well,
that could be the issue, right?
Yeah.
That could be the issue.
I mean, I don't know what you've seen, but from what I've seen online, like I said, my people I follow are a bit default aggressive and negative, but it did seem like there was a bit of issues trying to get their hands on that product. And there were some buyouts and it was selling for, it was pretty expensive.
Yeah, it's gross. I mean, we experienced this at the very first of the Classic Battles dropping as well because of the Dory cards, for instance. So it settled, right? Settled after a couple of weeks.
Yeah, buy singles.
And this is the first time of having this kind of product, right? This is the thing, like, I think you experience this when a product is new. But in saying that, next Armory Deck, you'll be super pumped about this one, Brittany, because Bolton is the next revealed Armory Deck coming out on July 12th. I think it's cool. I think it's nice that you use a hero like Bolton, who has a lot less living legend points, so players can pick this up and be really comfortable as a new player to know that the hero is not going to living legend. So
yeah, KO was an interesting pick, eh? Right? Because like KO was just in my opinion, KO was clearly powerful. I felt like that they did that on purpose. Like it would be a surprise mm-hmm. to me if they were like, oh, we didn't see that coming. Like I think they fucking saw that one coming.
No, of course.
Yeah, yeah, it's weird to make that the first armory deck because I think that Tarek said this, was like, yeah, that hero was like turboing itself to living legend. So
but you spent $50 or whatever on your thing, and then you get to play a competitive deck, and then at your armory, and then at Living Legends, and okay, but I got to, as a new player, pick up, because this is, again, aimed at new players mm-hmm. as well, I think. You pick it up, you get the experience to play a competitive deck at your armory for a reasonably low price comparatively, right, to other things, and then you learn the game, and then you move on. Like, I think it's a great first entry,
it's an
honestly.
Age-old question, I think, in Flesh and Blood is, like, what deck do you tell the new player to buy? Do you insulate them against something like Living Legend? Because for me...
Well, I always told people Bravo, and so that's aging well because it's still around, so yeah, no worries.
It's not going anywhere, baby. For me, like, I would definitely not suggest something that would probably Living Legend quick, because I think that when you first get into Flesh and Blood, you, and some people probably feel like this throughout their entirety of Flesh and Blood, but I think people really identify with the hero based gameplay, and I wouldn't want someone to have that initial attachment, fall, you know, have that first love they have with their hero in Flesh and Blood, to have it be, oh, you can't play with this anywhere, like you cannot have fun with us. So
you can play Living Legend,
yeah, you could play Living Legend at a day 3 PT, or I guess a date.
All right. Yeah. but I do think, so I kind of on the other side of that, I'd be like, well, you know, you can, again, play this for a relatively low cost, and then, hey, look, you've still got the Sash and these other cards that are great in other broods. So, but anyway. calling Warsaw this weekend. Check it out. Good luck to all those playing and attending. I think it's great that Poland gets more events. Obviously, massive supporter of Flesh and Blood since very early days. And you don't go to an event, you don't go to a pro tour without seeing them Team Poland shirts around, Brennan. So,
well,
it's great to see that.
Lest they forget who won the first Polish calling. It was not a Poland. Yeah, yeah. Flew across the pond to steal the trophy from the clutches of Polish people. No, I think they got us back.
They've come over to yours and done back. The same, so it's all right.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure they got us back at a more important tournament. But yeah, that first calling was actually sick. I can't remember if it was actually in Warsaw, but I don't know if you remember seeing the venue. It was like
the venue was insane. Yeah.
It almost looked like it was in like a place where you would host like an Oktoberfest or something, like
or a wedding or something. Germany. Honestly.
But yeah, it was like, wasn't it like wooden benches and it had like this like.
Yeah, it looked like a wedding venue.
Yeah, it was cool. It was cool. I was bummed that I didn't get to go to that one, to be honest.
Yeah, that'd be cool. Calling Tokyo and World Premiere happening next weekend. Again, good luck to all those playing and going. I will be there, looking forward to seeing some people. Super excited to play. Super excited to spend a couple of days in Tokyo.
First time?
I'm going to do more. No. I love Tokyo. and then going to do some more at the end of the year as well. So with Osaka, with Worlds. So yeah, that's the news this week. We've got a couple of come on, a quick out questions, Brendan, if we can jump in, unless you want to add anything else.
No, that's it.
Cool. Got a question from Jonathan Shortle. This is from YouTube. Yeah, it is. Come on, a quick out question. If time wasn't a factor, do you think Rochester draft format would work better, or at least ease some of the problems Fab has faced historically in its draft formats? I think face-up picks would disincentivize hard-forcing heroes and reward staying open early to mid-picks more of an option. Have you ever done a Rochester draft, Brennan?
I've watched a lot of them, because I've watched the old PTs where they did these. I've also watched the Alpha, Beta, Magic the Gathering, Rochester drafts.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, which that's good content if you're into that. It is.
Maybe just quickly, I'll explain what a Rochester draft is for this. Yeah. So a Rochester draft basically is a face-up draft where you still have eight people drafting it. There's been a few different variations of the years, but if you have eight people drafting it, one booster at a time is opened instead of, you know, every player opening a booster, and then you go sequentially around the table, taking a turn to pick, and then generally you would wheel the pick. So you go 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8. And then eighth also takes the ninth pick, and you wheel back, you know, you snake back around rather than wheel around. And that's kind of what a Rochester draft was. And it was really heavily used in the early days of Magic. I think it comes from basically being first played at an event in Rochester, basically in New York. So, but I think it's a very cool format to watch. I think it's very interesting as a format. But yeah, what do you think it would?
So let's talk about why Magic got rid of it. Magic got rid of it, one, because it takes forever. So imagine
so long.
Drafts already take forever at PTs and things like that.
It takes almost eight times as long, right?
Yeah, it takes a long, long, long time. So, and you also have to multiply the kind of like the pack mistakes, people dropping cart, like just all kinds of stuff. So it takes an egregiously long time. Also, players hate making mistakes that are publicly witnessed. So when you make a mistake in a draft, it's private. Nobody, mm-hmm. like, you're not,
sometimes.
I mean, for the most part, though, you're not immediately ridiculed. You don't feel like an idiot in front of other people. And that was actually a huge issue with Rochester Draft. Like, players really didn't mm-hmm. like it. And when I say players, I don't mean the players that were doing super, super well and maybe winning. They probably didn't like the time and things like that. But in terms of competitive integrity, people really liked Rochester Draft because it felt like a more skill expressive, but it's not skill expressive in terms of like the gameplay is better. I mean, Rochester Draft is entirely a skill in and of itself. And it's a very complicated skill. I mean, you're talking about like memorization, like having much better payoffs than it does in traditional draft. But one was the time, and two was people really didn't like making mistakes that were immediately ridiculed by their peers that were around them. Cause like, if you are forcing pack one, like people are going to think, you know, a certain type of way, even if that's an internal monologue with somebody where they just think people are thinking, like players generally don't like being put in that situation. That's actually why they got rid of it. Would that fix flesh and blood forcing? Interestingly enough, I think yes and no, but I think that players would kind of, I think the players would actually maybe just like collude a bit more on the forcing, right? Where it's like you have one person that like pack one, pick one, just goes, okay, brute card. And you got the person next to him is like, okay, Kasai specialization.
yeah.
And then like we all just kind of get in this agreement that like, you know, maybe some people disagree about the power levels of the heroes in the specific draft format, and then they just draft their lane off that. I ultimately, even if it had a higher competitive integrity than the current drafting experience does, I just think it's almost irrelevant in light of the issues that are accompanied with Rochester Draft because they are immense.
Yeah, I agree. I think there's a lot of issues with Rochester. I think it's fun. I think it's a fun thing to do every now and again. My kind of just general answer to this question is that I think more open information doesn't generally lead to a better experience, a better play experience. That's just my general kind of view. So if I use my kind of general philosophy on that, then probably not. This probably doesn't help as much as you would want it to kind of go through the process of using Rochester Draft. But as for instance, I agree with Brent. I don't think that it would actually disincentivize forcing. I actually think it would, in some cases, incentivize more forcing. Yeah. So I think it probably ebbs and flows. Yes, in some aspects it might do that. In some aspects it may do the opposite. And rewards staying open? Well, but how do you stay at rewards staying open when you have perfect information? Like, that's kind of, you know, I think when you have imperfect information, I think you get a lot more rewarded for staying open because you can skill express the staying open side of it. And there's things about, you know, is there enough cards and packs, et cetera, inflation blood to do that, whatever. That's a whole different thing. But it's a great question, though.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really interesting question. My favorite kind of questions, honestly.
I love looking back at some of these, like both, you know, things that maybe Magic used to do, maybe the things that they're doing now, and then sort of trying to transpose that to Flesh and Blood. And would that be a net positive or a net negative for our current game experience? Because there definitely are some things that Flesh and Blood inherited from Magic that, you know, maybe it could innovate a little bit more on mm-hmm. its own. But yeah, I think it's an awesome question because, like, there's so many interesting things about Magic the Gathering, especially like the history. Like, have you ever heard of a Magic the Gathering format called Vanguard?
Yeah, I've heard of all of Magic
the Gathering. Yeah. Well, I hadn't for a while. I hadn't.
Oh, because you came in late.
Yeah. So it's like a hero-based format where you have different intellect, where you draw different amounts of starting hand sizes. Like, it's it's very analogous to Flesh and Blood, which I had no idea about. I had no idea. Super interesting.
It was an online-only format, though, because of the way that it worked, but... Right? I think you should only play that online, right? Surely. Anyway.
I think they may have played at an event, I'm pretty sure.
Did they really? Wow, okay.
I have to think.
Maybe there was a hero that like transformed cards, so I guess it couldn't have been that one. But anyway, hero, whatever. Anyway, you want to get your questions on the Commander Cookout, please do so. You can drop them in the YouTube comments below. Let us know it is a Commander Cookout question. You can email us at arsenalpassfab@gmail.com. If you're a Arsenal Pass patron, then you can drop it in the Patreon channel and Discord, or you can tweet at us, give me a handwritten note, Tokyo, whatever you want to do with your question. That said, Brendan, part the misfail, previews, week one, really. Let's get into it. Let's talk new. Let's talk new. Want to talk new?
Yeah. If you haven't seen Flesh and, by the way, I know that you've seen it, but Legendary Studios, so the Fab TCG YouTube channel, is actually doing gameplay videos with the new heroes. Which, if you're playing in Tokyo,
you should watch them.
You should watch them. Yeah, because like, there's nothing can really compare to like actually seeing the cards played together. Mm-hmm. It's a lot of context.
And the interactions.
Yep.
Yep. Just quickly, elephant in the room, Brennan, because I know a couple people did ask. We don't have a preview this season, just so people are aware. We will not be dropping a preview. Let's talk new. I will read out the hero, and then there's a couple of cards I want to touch on. And then we'll because we've seen weapons now as well, obviously, with the Blitz decks. We know what to expect in Limited. Doesn't necessarily translate to what we play in Classic Constructed, right? But with one hero in particular, I think that you're kind of probably locked into the weapon, but not clear yet. Anyway, so new, if you haven't seen, is a Mystic Assassin hero. Obviously, there's young and old. Starts at 20 and 40 life, depending on young or adult hero. And new says your attacks with stealth get when this chain link resolves, banish all action cards defending this. And it has instant 3 chi resource. Look at the top card of an opposing hero's deck. If it's blue, you may banish it. And until end of turn, you may play blue cards from the hero's banished zone without paying their resource cost. So I think it's worth just a couple of things. If, you know, we're kind of going to keep this, we're going to start with the basics a little bit because some people may not have looked too heavily into Part of the Misfile cards yet, but also the set is not super straightforward.
No.
There's a lot of keywords. There's a lot of things happening. So just quickly, stealth is a static keyword that has no other text to it, right? Stealth is just a status to a card, a keyword status to a card. So the hero ability or other cards give stealth meaning. So for instance, new when attacks with stealth, gives the cards of stealth, they get this keyword, sorry, they get this text which says when this chain link resolves, banish all action cards defending it. So obviously if you banish any blue cards, then eventually new is potentially going to play those blue cards that your opponent defended with through the hero ability. But of course you need to have chi resources to do that. So you have to transcend some cards to get your chi resource. So it's, you know, it's not super straightforward, honestly, but we talked about this when the hero was first shown. This is a powerful ability. This is effectively allowing you to play extra because, again, that hero ability, you know, until end of turn. So you have to be able to activate this to play any of the cards from banish. And obviously, even if you whiff the banish card off the opposing hero's deck, you still get to play all the other cards. And it says if it's blue, you may banish it. But then don't worry about that because it says until end of turn, you may play blue cards from that hero's banish zone without paying the resource cost. That's not just you can play a card. That's amount of cards. So it's a very insane and powerful hero ability, right?
Yeah, it's particularly interesting, and I think that the text on the hero just doesn't tell the entire story because you're going to be ideally banishing those cards with other assassin cards because that's something the assassin does.
And also obviously what new gives stealth cards, which is they banish action cards. So if they banish any blue action cards.
Yeah, it's interesting the wax and wanes of the convoluted Flesh and Blood sets because this is it's giving me sort of some of the same feelings I had when I was first looking at Bright Lights. I was like, fucking Evo, like what, how are we doing this? Like it was just, it's so confusing, but I feel honestly that's why I recommend watching the gameplay videos, because like once you watch the just watch the cards played together, so many things will make infinitely more sense than trying to just evaluate it all by looking at the individual cards.
Yeah, let's talk about some of the cards and some of the maybe the play patterns and things like that we're seeing early on with new, whether you're gonna be playing for premiere or pre-release, or you're starting to brew for Classic Constructed. If you haven't seen the common weapon yet that we've seen, this is a Beckoning Mistblade. It's a Mystic Assassin weapon dagger, one-handed. It says once per turn action, attacks one. It says once per turn action, 2 resources attack, go again. When this hits, your next blue attack this turn gets +1 and go again. So this feels like it's going to be the limited weapon, right? It's an enabler for your blues. It gives them go again, allows you to, you know, play blues from potentially banished with go again, etc. So it just gives you value to your cards. I think clearly a very important weapon to what you're going to be doing potentially in Classic Constructed, but definitely in Limited.
How do you feel about this in comparison to the other assassin weapons, like the ones with piercing and things like that? Like how do you compare the value?
So piercing obviously makes things really difficult because you can't just throw a piece of equipment in front of it to stop the on-hit effect. And if that on-hit effect is going to be relevant, let's say, you know, it's the one that's going to give your attack actions -1. And then, you know, your opponent's going to come in with an on-hit effect that could potentially give them a lot of value, then all of a sudden your cards block less, the value they get is higher. That one damage on that weapon attack all of a sudden could be worth like 3 or 4 damage that they're coming in with the old weapons, for instance. Whereas, you know, on this, you don't have piercing. It's just one damage. But if it does hit, then it potentially gives you kind of plus one value of attack and a go again, which maybe equate to kind of maybe 3 value potentially. So there is a kind of, if it hits, plus 4 value. So similar kind of in potential value upside, but it doesn't have piercing. And I think that's really huge because you can throw pieces of equipment in front of it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Super interesting. I mean, this, I think it is a bit of a context-based weapon. I mean, we got to know what the blues look like to an extent. Because like, mm-hmm. are we going to be wanting to put these, like the large amount of blues in our decks? And are they good enough to get plus 1 and go again? And how does it match up against potentially some of the other heroes that you could be playing? Like, it's just it's so contextual. But just keep it in mind what the weapon does, because it's important to know as we evaluate the cards.
Just quickly, right? So, you know, maybe if you're playing against heroes in the set, you're playing as a guardian, for instance, you know, blue, you need some power out of some of these blue actions, right? Blues, obviously, they're inherently less powerful, but at this point where you get to play 3 or 4 different, you know, blues in a turn for free, that might be enough to make it just kind of insane. But on the flip side of that, remember, this is action cards. All of a sudden, you pair into Dorinthia, and they're just blocking with their blue attack reactions. It don't work, you know what I mean? So it's contextual to the hero you're playing against, which I think is cool. I do like that aspect of Flesh and Blood, where you have interactions based differently on the heroes you're playing. It's not just kind of your game plan's linear. I want to talk about some of these attack reactions and these new cards we've seen. We've seen Crouching Tiger before. Now we've got these Mystic Assassin attack reactions as well. But first of all, how do you make those? So Venomous Bite, this is a Mystic Assassin attack reaction. We're looking at the red one. It defends for 3, costs 1, and says target Assassin on Mystic attack action. Card gets plus 3 attack this turn. If you've pitched a blue card this turn, create a Fang Strike. So we've talked about this card previously when we first saw it, but now we've seen what Fang Strike, and also there's another one, which is Hiss, which creates a Slither, does the same thing, plus 3 attack, but creates a Slither. Now we've seen those. So I think these are awesome. So Slither is a Mystic Assassin attack reaction. It costs 0. It has no color, no cost. No color, no defense value because it's ephemeral. And ephemeral is this can't start the game in your deck. If this would be put into a graveyard, instead remove it from the game. So same as Crouching Tiger. And it says target attack action card gets go again. And Fang Strike says target attack action card gets plus 1 attack. I think these cards are super interesting and really cool. You know, you can actually... You can't start this in your deck, right? But when mm-hmm. you create it with Fang Strike or Hiss or any other card that might create these, you do get to put it into your hand, right? And you can sit this in Arsenal, for instance. You can sit this in your hand. You obviously can't pitch it, so it can't stay in your deck that way. And as soon as you play it, it's going to disappear. But you can put it in your Arsenal, for instance. You could put the go again one, like Slither, in your Arsenal until you want to have a big turn and give things go again. For instance, maybe some blues that you've nabbed from your opponent's banish zone.
Yeah, I think that's cool. I mean, that's a good point. Like, how do you feel like this equates to like a TCG concept of like card advantage?
I think this is some of the closest we've seen before. Yeah. I mean, let's look at something like let's take Hiss, which creates a Slither token, right? So you pay 1 for plus 3 mm-hmm. and as an attack reaction. Potentially, you know, you push an on-hit effect, which already has value, as attack reactions do, right? Attack reactions get extra value for potentially pushing on-hit effects. They always have. So, you know, you're 1 for 3 there off a card, and then all of a sudden you've created the Slither, which can then give something else go again, which, you know, you can often equate to anywhere from 0 to 3 or 4 value, right? Depending on the situation. But again, it's a card. You've effectively drawn a card that says go again, or you've effectively drawn a card that gives something plus 1 attack. And in Fangstrike's case, it's a little bit easier to evaluate the value of that. So it's plus 1 attack. But again, if it's pushing another on hit effect, that could be really relevant. And you could use this on the next chain link, or you could use this on a future chain link if you sit in Arsenal, for instance. So, yeah, I think these cards are some of the closest things you can kind of equate to card advantage in some ways, honestly.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that putting these in Arsenal will be quite powerful, especially like the Gogan one on, you know, like a 5-card hand at that point. Yep. What's interesting to me is that I wonder, because this hero, like, it has attack reactions, it does feel like it is a bit of like a faster hero. Like, it does feel like it would be faster just inherently. Like, I think about attack reactions and warrior, like, it's just a bit more on the aggressive side. But I wonder if these cards will be a little bit slow compared to some of the other strategies, because you're just kind of getting this incremental value, and you do want to probably bank it for the next future turn. I mean, maybe if it's a plus one on the attack action, maybe fire it off then. But it feels like with Slither, it's going to be more contextual based off the situation when you get that token.
Yeah,
which
it's a slow build, right?
Yeah.
Like, you look at some of the heroes in the format right now, you know, something like a KO or some of the heroes of past, you know, and their big burst damage, they're doing it from as early as turn one or turn two, you know, and they're kind of pushing this big amount of damage. Assassin has never been this. Assassin is, it's a kind of small amounts of value added up over the course of a longer game. And in Gnu's case, obviously, when you start to activate that hero ability, once you've transcended some chi, and you've obviously banished some blue cards, that's when you can really start to equate some value. But that's going to take time to get to, right?
Mm-hmm.
There's a card I want to talk about, because there's definitely some like turbo mill aspect to this almost. You know, there's potential fatigue implications of this hero as well, because of the amount of cards it's going to not only obviously you're banishing from the defensive zone. You know, when cards are defending with Gnu's hero ability with stealth cards, but there's also these stealth cards that actually do some banishing, and obviously there's assassin cards that obviously banish the top card of the deck, which we've seen previously. But there's a card I think is quite interesting. It's it's called Art of Desire Body. So assume that we're going to get other Art of Desires. We'll see. But anyway, this card is Art of Desire : Body. It is a assassin attack action rare. We're looking at the red version. It costs 0, attacks for 3, defends for 3, and says stealth. When this hits a hero, banish the top card of the deck. When this banishes a red card, draw a card and gain 1 life. This card's really good.
Yeah, it does seem very good. It does seem very good. Yield 0 for 4. I mean...
Or more. Because even if you don't banish a red card and you banish a blue card instead, then that's fuel for...
It's funny how that works, right? You're actually, like, you're benefiting off both, like, both sides. Where it's like if you...
Just don't banish yellow.
Yeah.
There's incentivization to play yellows, mate.
I don't think you'd play yellows. Like, yes, maybe.
Yeah, I'm playing mono yellow, dude. I'm just playing Prism for now.
I'm playing my... My deck is so bad that if you banish things from it, it will be bad for you, too. Like,
exactly. Yeah. I'm ready to play Unified Decree, yellow, and just non-stop attack reactions off deck, mate. There you go.
Okay. In all seriousness, I don't like. Yes. Just for the people who don't sense the hyperbole and sarcasm. No, this would not be a good enough reason to put yellows in your deck. Most likely.
Yeah. There's one other card I want to go out from Gnu, and then a couple of questions, and then let's move on to another hero. Double Trouble. This is an assassin action attack at rare. We're looking at the red again. Defends for 3, attacks for 3, has stealth, and says if you've played or activated 2 or more attack reactions this chain, this gets +2. And when this hits a hero, banish the top 2 cards of the deck. So potentially a 0 for 5 that banishes top 2 cards. Obviously, there's a lot of hoops to jump through, 2 attack reactions to do that, but there's good attack reactions around. There's obviously some in the set, there's some in previous sets as well. And then the fact that this does some more milling of cards, but also potentially hitting more blues that you can play with your hero ability.
Cost 0 too, so like you bank one of the slithers from a previous turn, you draw a Venomous Bite or something with this Double Trouble. Like, it seems like you're in a good position.
Yeah, smart. Huge. Yeah. 100%. Yeah, you bank one of those ethereal tokens that are attack reactions. Well, yeah, you're right. Yeah. You're halfway there already.
Yeah, halfway there. And then all you need to do is draw, like, an attack reaction that facilitates, which I'm assuming there will be some sort of critical mass of, because you've already seen 2 at common. So it seems like a very, very reasonable play with not too much setup. And Slither seems like something I'd be happy to park in my arsenal. Like, the +1, like, I like that, but the Gogan, especially in something like Assassin, which always has these like 0 for 3s without a Gogan, they have stealth, they block for 3. But Gogan just seems so good.
Mm-hmm. I 100% agree.
Yeah.
Let's talk a little bit about just Gnu overall. I think obviously stealth is going to be really important, and it's in different ways to Azuri. Obviously, stealth having, again, not being just being a keyword, but having different implications. This is also a really cool design space, I think, you know, that stealth kind of has different, what stealth means is different to different assassins. I think that's really cool, thematically, but also just in the way that plays out from a gameplay standpoint. Attack reaction is obviously going to play a big part in what Gnu is going to do. The role of blue attack reacts and is also quite interesting as well, I think, as kind of resource bases, but also, you know, there's some of these cards that transcend as well, because obviously you need to transcend to get chi, so you need some blue cards to be played to be able to do that. So what's the role of blue attack reactions in your deck? I look at a card like Passover, for instance. This is banish target card. So it's a Mystic Instant. It's legendary. This is banish target card from opposing hero's graveyard. If you've played another blue card this turn, transcend. So cards like this are quite interesting. But obviously, hey, do I need to have played another blue maybe reaction. Do I need to have played a blue attack reaction to push something over, or do I want to play a blue attack? I think that's kind of interesting for new.
Yeah, I feel like it would. I mean, I feel like I'd be rather be playing the blue attack reaction, but I don't know. Hard to say. I mean, it's just your resource
base. That's the reason, right? Not a breakpoint. So, like, for instance, you know, these south cards that attack for three, they're not a breakpoint, right, at three. Whereas, so maybe I just want to play the blue attack that attacks for one because it's...
Yeah. So, in this format, we're capped to 30 cards, right, in draft?
Yeah, but that's... Yeah, yeah. I'm thinking for not necessarily just draft. I'm thinking for constructed as well.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, I'm super interested to see how that plays out, but I wonder what the prevalence of deck damage will be in a 30v30 format. Because deck damage, the reason why, in my opinion, that deck sizes were so frustrating is that there would be an asymmetry in the sizes of decks, and your opponent would immediately be able to pivot to a game plan where they would focus on deck damage. But now, I wonder, because it is locked at 30v30, if there is a hero that will have like a selection of cards to where that can be like a more...
Always the case.
Yes, it can be a more realistic primary game plan than something than the other two heroes, right? There is an asymmetry in terms of the effectiveness of their cards in terms of milling the opponent out, which could be assassin, right? Like your assassin, right? Because you have these 0/3s, they're going to demand a card every time, they have on hit triggers, and that are also just milling more cards. So could assassin potentially default to deck damage every single time?
On the flip side, they have less damage on the front side of the cards, right? Like three is less than heroes are going to have seven, for instance, on the front side of the cards.
True. So, but they also
I think it's super interesting.
Weapon, yeah, it's really interesting. Yep. So we'll have to see how that plays out. I do think that fatigue and deck damage is not going anywhere, but I think that immediate pain point where it's like my opponent has 37 cards, I have 32. Like, I think that part will be gone, but it could be replaced by a more degenerate strategy where it's my opponent is playing X hero. They will mill me.
Let's move on to Zen. Mm-hmm. Zen is our Mystic Ninja hero. I have three questions for Zen, which we can come back to, but these are the things I thought about when I was looking at Zen cards. They were, how crazy can we really go with Crashing Tigers? Like, how big can turns be? Which we'll get to. Combo cards have to be key, surely. ? And which mask do I play in Classic Constructed? With Zen. So Zen is a Mystic Ninja hero, 40 and 20 health for adult and young respective. It says once per turn, instant 3 chi resource, create a Crouching Tiger in your hand. Search your deck for a card with combo, banish it, then shuffle. You may play it this turn. We talked about this when we first saw Zen get revealed in terms of equating it to Katsu's hero ability, right?
Yes.
You know, obviously you have to pay for this, but then that's the card you effectively lose, like you would with Katsu, but it's obviously chi resource and it's on demand, so a little bit more hoops to jump through, but potentially more powerful. If you haven't seen Crashing Tiger before, this is a reprint. We have seen this card before, but just quickly, it is ephemeral, so same thing, doesn't start the game in your deck, but it can be created, and if it goes to graveyard, it just gets removed from the game. It is a zero-cost ninja attack action that attacks for zero and says go again. And there's all these ways to give it power and for the attacking with it to be relevant for combat chains, etc. So,
yeah. Question real quick. How easy do you think it will be to transcend in limited?
I mean, this is the question, right? This is the thing about going back to deck size and deck density, and these transcend cards they're weak.
Walk zero.
They're weak cards.
And they're contextual, so, right? Like let's say we played Passover and we didn't play another blue card this turn. I mean, the card is freaking
terrible.
Dog shit. So, there's a lot of push and pull going on there.
Yeah, I mean, this feels like a fairly low power set to me, honestly. But with the ability to spike big damage through setup turns, and like a second cycle is going to be really important. I don't know if you remember playing, you know, like 30 card Azalea decks back in Arcane Rising. Like that was a kind of a low power set. But because you would often just play like 30 to 32 cards in Azalea and try and set up these like second cycle stacks to push through a couple of big turns to kill your opponent. Is it going to be similar? I don't know. Honestly, I don't know where this set's going to land for limited right now. But I think as we see more cards, we'll work it out. But anyway, I think Crashing Tigers and how big you can go with that is super interesting to me. I want to talk about the weapon. This is Tiger Taming Kakara. It's a ninja weapon, staff two-handed. Attacks for two, says once per turn action, two resources attack, go again. When this attacks, the next Crouching Tiger you play this combat chain gets +1. So if you're creating Crouching Tigers, sorry. Honestly, if you're creating Crouching Tigers, geez, I'm struggling. It effectively attacks for three, right? Or gives you a next attack plus one. But if you're not, then it's just going to be a two-cost attack for two go again.
Ninjas,
so it's like Ember Blade-esque.
Yeah, ninjas don't use staves. Monks use staves.
No, this ninja does, mate.
This ninja does. Yeah. I mean, like, I don't know. It's hard to evaluate in limited, to be honest. I think this is going to be, like, reasonably, like, your only option. I'm assuming we're not getting another common. Interesting.
Mm. Yeah, but it's from the...
Okay.
It's from the Blitz deck, so it's probably a
for a loop. I was like,
what? Yeah, it's probably a token.
I haven't seen that. Yeah, probably a token. Yeah.
But obviously, it gives, you know, this is it's a weapon that's giving some power to your Crouching Tigers immediately, and that's without having to play out the card. So I think the design makes a lot of sense. Can we quickly talk about Cloaked? Because we haven't talked about Cloaked yet.
Yep.
Cloaked yet. If you haven't seen this, Cloaked is a new keyword on equipment. And Cloaked says, equip this face down.
Yep.
I think this is really cool. So I'm going to read the Mystic Ninja equipment chest. It's called Heirloom of Tiger Hide. It defends for three, has Cloaked, so equip this face down, and says, while this is equipped face down, at the start of your turn, if you have exactly one life, you may turn this face up. It has Blade Break. So start the game face down. Ooh, what does my opponent have in their chest slot? Which one could it be? Because there's multiple Cloaked cards. All of a sudden, I'm on one life. I flip this up, get to block for three, turn the tide of the game, win the game. Maybe. It's interesting. One life is now a very interesting break point in this game, because there's a lot of cards that in the set that say if you're at one life, you can flip it, but otherwise it's going to do nothing. So actually, I don't want to put my opponent to one life. I want to put them to two, and then I want to kill them.
My evaluation of this mechanic from a layman perspective is they're trying to increase this like this information asymmetry, which was kind of the case in the previous set, but not as much. I mean, you had this idea that you were gambling and you were taking sort of structured.
You're talking about Clash, right?
Yeah, Clash. You're taking structured risk and structured bets against your opponent that you would potentially win the Clash. Where in this, like, your opponent is faced now with the question of, do they have this or do they not? I wonder. Yeah, what's interesting. I wonder the swath of Cloaked equipment that are available, and you know how many ifs, the questions of ifs you'd be having in a normal game of limited. I'm assuming it's more than one, so you will be guessing. But yeah, I think that they want that tension. Like that's really what they're going for with this. Like that design we saw from Heavy Hitters, now moving on to Part of Misfile, is like they want this more, you know, very much unknown and kind of like gotcha moments.
Yeah, which I think is kind of cool. I mean, imagine watching, you're at home. You're watching the coverage of the world premiere or the calling, whatever. Someone's fighting for top eight, and then the opponent swings in. They've like had to put them in one life to try and threaten lethal, and they swing in. It's like, okay, do you have one of the ones that prevents three damage, or do you have one of the ones that just kind of like does an offensive thing?
Yeah,
you know, saves you for, yeah, what do you have?
I think competitive players will appreciate this mechanic more than Clash, because Clash was a mechanic where it was fun. It was super exciting to watch on camera too. Like, comes down to a Clash that flip, like, oh my God, the warrior won the Clash. And it's like this crazy thing to get this really nasty token. But this, there is no random, right? And I think some players didn't enjoy that part of the Clash mechanic, especially like, you know, things like the Pro Tour. And I think that Cloaked is kind of pulling from that same experience, but taking away the randomization of it.
Yeah, I agree. That's exactly how I feel. So I like Clash, but I really like this mechanic. I want to talk about one other card for Zen. You know, we're kind of talking about, it's going to be interesting to see how you can utilize these Crouching Tigers. I think it's cool that there's a Crouching Tiger hero, what that's going to look like. And I mean, my lens right now is probably more limited because of the World Premiere next weekend, but I think, and calling, but I think the constructed elements can be interesting. There's a card called Untamed, which is a common from the set. It is a ninja action attack. It costs one. We're looking at the red version. Attacks for four, defense for two. And says, when this attacks, the next Crouching Tiger you play this combat chain gets plus one attack, has go again. So, you know, a 1/4/5 damage that has go again, that's really powerful. Obviously, you need to have created the Crouching Tiger, but if you can, then you get to utilize some of these cards that have really strong value to them and go again, right? So if I maybe, because again, you can ask new Crouching Tigers. Maybe I created a Crouching Tiger last turn, and on my turn, I defend with two cards, and I pitch a blue, I come in with an Untamed. Oh, sorry, I come in with my weapon plus Untamed or something, and then play my Crouching Tiger to get plus two. all of a sudden, you know, I've had a, what's that? It's a 2-card 8. It's quite nice, right?
It's pretty good for limited. Very, very good.
6, 7. Yeah, 2-card 8. I'm trying to do the math.
Hold the 5. Yep.
Yep.
We got there.
Ooh, I'm good at math. So, yeah, I think this card's really interesting, and I'm excited to see kind of what Crouching Tigers can be. You know, it feels like there's going to be some times. This set strikes me as there's going to be some times where cards are going to be really awkward and hard to utilize. That makes me think that second cycle is going to be even more important.
You know what that makes me think?
What?
You just play the fucking...
Pure numbers?
Yeah, you just play the number deck. I mean, that's usually how it goes.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see.
That's the concern, right?
Yep. We'll see. Before we move on to Enigma, I want to ask you a question before it slips my mind. But you're heading into the limited tournament. You're traveling across the world for it.
Calling?
Yes. What hero are you gravitating towards?
Oh, that's a good question. I don't know right now. None of them, I think. I just wait and see. I mean, I always gravitate probably towards the hero that has just the, probably the quote-unquote best linear weapon. So I guess that's Zen in that case, right? But I don't know. It's hard to say right now. We'll see.
Yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I think for me, if I was going to play, the one that seems the most dubious to me is probably, we'll get into it, Enigma. I mean, Illusionist, right? And Limited is always, yeah, let's get into Enigma. It's a funky hero. I'll read it out, Enigma.
Yeah, you do some reading on my voice is struggling.
My reading comprehension or reading, yeah, I can't even say what's the word. Dictation is terrible. Anyway, Mystic Illusionist Hero. 4 intellect, 20 health. Your first spectral shield attack each turn costs 1 less to activate. Once per turn instant. 3 chi, create a spectral shield token with a +1 counter. And those counters are going to matter.
Yeah, you have to read the weapon for any of this to make sense, right?
Yes, none of it does make sense. All right, Cosmo, just the name of this. All right, the Illusionist weapon, two-hander, it's a token, most likely. Cosmo, Scroll of Ancestral Tapestry. During your turn, auras you control with ward are weapons with base power equal to their ward, and they have... Once per turn action, 1 resource attack. Your aura attacks with 1 or more +1 counters, which is not equal to their ward. That was my parentheses. Get go again. So the +1 counters are relevant for go again. Makes sense.
Pretty powerful.
Everybody,
right?
Understand?
It looks pretty powerful. Yeah, so let's use an example, right?
Yeah.
You have a spectral shield. You have no counters on it. You can attack with it for free if it's your first spectral shield, but then you're not going to have go again. Oh. Never mind, I have 2 spectral shields. 1 has a +1 counter and 1 doesn't. I attack with my first one with a +1 counter. I attack for 2 because it's ward 1 and it's got +1 attack. So it comes up for 2. It's free and it has go again because of my hero ability. And then the next one costs me 1 and attacks 1 with no go again. So there you go. Or I have a ward aura, maybe something like, and we can talk about this one right now, Waxing Spectre, which is a Mystic Illusionist instant aura. It's at red. It costs 2. And it says, if you've pitched a blue card this turn, this enters the arena with a +1 counter on it. It has ward 3. So, you know, it's kind of like an attack in some ways. You can play it at instant speed. It costs 2 and it kind of attacks a 4 because there's ward 3 plus 1 counter. It's interesting.
Let me ask you a question.
Oh, this set is so interesting.
What does this tell you? So the first attack's on Enigma. Your first spectral shield attack each turn costs 1 less to activate. Why is that on the hero? What does that tell you about the design?
It tells me that incidental spectral shields are important, and if you can turn your spectral shield into a damage saved on defense plus some amount of damage on offense often for free, that there's, you know, this hero is always going to be able to do something with our spectral shield even with no cards in hand.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's kind of where the design space is. And obviously once you transcend and you get further down the line, right, of evolving your deck and getting chi available to you, you can just then start pitching the card to create a spectral shield with. So this is Enigma has the most powerful chi ability in terms of just create things from nothing, right? Whereas, you know, the other heroes need something. They need to go and find a combo card. If you're Zen, they need to be able to have cards in the banish zone, whereas Enigma can just pitch three, you know, pitch a chi card, pitch 3 chi resource to just create a spectral shield with a +1 counter on it.
Mm-hmm.
So it just creates an attack that attacks for 2 with go again for free.
Yep. This is...
That's pretty good.
Yeah, the first text here is just particularly interesting to me because it's just like...
Yeah.
I think it is like it does elucidate a lot about the power of fear and what it's trying to do. And you ask like, well, why is that there? Why does it say the first spectral shield each turn costs 1 less to activate? And I think it's what you talked about. Like it wants to be able to still kind of go in with that shield even if it has 0 cards in hand. Like the incremental damage. in regards to Zero Cards in Hand. Really interesting. Because I feel like this hero could not have that text, and it wouldn't have, like, phased my first evaluation of it.
Yeah. So. Just to be clear, if people... Special Shield. So Special Shield is an illusion's token aura. It just says Ward 1. It didn't used to. It got eroded. It says Ward 1. It used to just prevent 1 damage, but it now says Ward 1. The keyword was eroded. Yeah, it's interesting. I mean, there's a couple of cards I wouldn't mind talking about that kind of allude to maybe how this hero might be played or the things you want to do, whether it's in Limited or Class Constructed. We obviously talked about one of those instant auras already, but this Waning Vengeance I think is a really interesting one. This is a 1-cost Mystic Illusionist instant aura at common. We're looking at the red version. This is when this leaves the arena. If you've pitched a blue card this turn, create a Spectral Shield, and it has Ward 3. So obviously that kind of has implications about when you play this at instant speed, maybe pitching it to play this as a defensive card, but then getting a Spectral Shield so you get effectively 4 value out of this. But we just talked about the hero ability, right? Mm. It could be more than 4 value. It could be 5 value because they get to attack with it for free.
Mm. Persistent. I think this stuff's interesting. Persistent really board states and developing.
And also, just quickly, these cycles, so Waning Vengeance, for instance, we'll look at the red one. So the yellow one would have Ward 2, the blue one would have Ward 1 is what we're seeing, basically.
Question. You are in Tokyo, you're sitting down in the tournament. Everything's on the line, especially your reputation. Can't do bad here.
Always reputation.
And
always
reputation. You open Enigma.
Mm-hmm.
You go against your first opponent. You win the die roll. Are you going first or second?
I'm probably going first, I assume. Yeah. I don't know. This is dependent.
That's atypical.
Without context. Yeah, so
there
why
is context,
is that, right?
Though. Waning Vengeance. Waning Vengeance.
No, going first is good right now. Going first is good right now.
Limited?
Yeah.
It's interesting because going first, I think the going first, going second dynamic is also interesting in the context of 30 v 30 decks.
I agree. But Waning Vengeance, why I think it's contextual.
Yeah, Waning Vengeance is a decent amount. Waning Vengeance is infinitely better on offense than it is on defense. It's fucking dog shit on defense.
if 30 cards matter, then I get to take cards from my opponent's hand when I play this on turn 0 and attack with it as well.
Yeah. So, I also don't think I don't want this in hand when I'm going second. It's like really bad.
Yeah, I don't want to be. I mean, yeah, but if I'm going. Well, no, if I'm going second, then at least I can potentially play it after my opponent's attacked and then draw up and be able to play more stuff. Like, okay, let's use this as an example. I want to leverage my life as a resource. My opponent says pass because they want me to play out my auras and then they want to attack me and pop the ward, right? So then I go, okay, I play one single aura, for instance, off of blue. So I'm going to trade 2 cards for potentially 4 or 5
I made a mistake, though. When I read this, I didn't read instant. I just read aura.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, they're instants. But this is kind of... So going first or second, I think it's going to be really interesting. I'm not sure which is better right now. So I actually think your question is a great question, even though maybe you forgot they're instant. But yeah, it's... Let's talk about some ones that aren't instant, for instance, because they're not all instants. So Vengeful Apparition is an illusionist attack... an illusionist action aura. At common, I'm looking at the blue one here, defends for 3, costs 0, and says when this leaves the arena, if you control no illusionist auras, you may play your next aura with cost 0 this turn as though it were an instant. If you do it, into the arena with a +1 counter, and it has ward 1. So here's some non-instant ones. The non-instant ones defend for 3, the instant ones seem to defend for 2 for the most part. For none, obviously, because they're instants. So yeah, I mean, it's interesting. You know, there's this combination of some instants, some not instants, some cards that block, some cards that don't block. This here is complicated, honestly.
Yeah, I'll leave it to Yuha to tell me how this works.
Yuha? Yeah, come on, Yuha. Tell us how it works.
I need a PowerPoint presentation right now.
There's one other card I want to talk about when it comes to... I mean, yeah, so I guess when it comes to my questions for Enigma, I've got so many right now. I think it's the hero that I understand the least. What do the game plans look like? How do you use Ward? How does this hero play? What are its key game plans? Are there no kind of linear game plans and it's actually all non-linear depending on the cards? I'm really interested. But obviously, there's going to be archetypes, right? Once we get to draft and we start to work out what things look like, there's going to be preferences of cards you want to do and cards you don't and how you draft the hero. But right now, I really can't see it. There's one other card I want to talk about. The card we've seen is a Mystic Action. It's not any class. It's just a Mystic Action. And it is at blue. It costs 0. It's called First Tenet of Chi Moon. Again, this is a colon in it, so I'm assuming there's cards that are not just moon. It says your next blue attack this turn gets when this attacks, draw a card. go again. This is great because this is a three block that is a blue that helps enable Transcend. I think this card is going to be potentially important. It's not super powerful, right? Because you have to play a blue to draw the card, so you have to play two blues.
Yeah.
But I think it's good. Defense three.
I think it is that Transcend enabler, like you said.
But it's a bad one in some ways because it requires you to play two blues to get the card back.
Oh, no. I was looking at this card. I was like, okay.
But it also balances off because... Weird. Yeah, because yeah, it's not a blue that cantrips itself. It's a blue that cantrips another blue. But because you're probably going to play so many blues in your deck, it does give you some extra value to your blues. So it's interesting.
I'm definitely not sold, but...
No. I think the way to look at this card is it's not like a one-for-one cantrip. It's like a one for like point something of a card, which is interesting.
Yep. I mean, it makes sense that the Illusionist is confusing as all hell. It always is. Like, we just don't have enough context, and it's definitely a non-linear deck. Or I assume it's going to be a non-linear deck in draft. But
that weapon is powerful.
Do not. I'm doing the same thing I'm doing in every freaking world premiere. Numbers.deck. I would probably fat deck if I could, but you can't. So I would just numbers.deck. Give me the consistent weapon. Give me the block threes. I'm sending it. I'm probably sending Zen, bro. I mean, honestly.
Let someone prove you wrong.
I'm probably sending Nu or Zen. Like, but that's obvious. That's obvious that you might avoid the Illusionist stuff of like your first year world premiere. But yeah. I'm a numbers doc deck kind of guy. And I'd probably deck Dammy fatigue people if it was possible. But we'll see. I'm interested to hear your battle report.
I'll let you know how it goes. I mean, I'm going to use the world premiere to work out what the heck's going on for the calling the next day. You know, like I'm probably, you know, potentially even might just force Enigma so I can work out how do you play this hero? What does it look like? But we'll see. I mean, what we did for Queenstown, for instance, is we played the world premiere and then there's also another sealed straight after we played that one. And then we also had some prize packs. So we took all those back home, built up multiple pools and just tried to learn what everything did that evening as much as possible before the calling the next day. And I think it worked out well. Like, I think I had a good understanding of what, for the most part, each of the heroes did, except for Victor. I couldn't get my head around Victor. And then that kind of was to my detriment in the draft. So...
Yeah, so you still haven't told people about Brody giving you the entire set early?
Yeah, I forgot to mention that one, actually.
That's a joke, by the way. Relax.
It's a joke. All right. Do you want to take us out on this pod? Honestly, I'm really interested. This set is super interesting. I'm really keen to play the world premiere and then get into Constructed. I mean, right now, Constructed means a lot less to me, but it will mean more at some point, obviously.
Awesome. Well, if you enjoy this podcast, the one thing you do is leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. It's a number one thing you can do. Twitter's at BrendanAPG and Fian_Dale. Special shout out to all the Arsenal Pass patrons. We had a bunch of new patrons join up with the new deck techs that came out, so we really appreciate that. There is a KO deck tech up, a Kasai deck tech up, and a Reinar Hayden video. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you call it a deck. Is it a, you call it a deck tech? Yep.
I mean, there's all the sideboard guides are there on the link. So
yeah, there's a Reinar deck tech up on Patreon that Hayden did specifically for Patreon. So check that out if you're interested. And yeah, I'm excited. It's cool. Like this, the aesthetic, the heroes, the game plans, like what looks to be the game plans, they vibe with me a lot more than Heavy Hitters did. Like Heavy Hitters was cool. You know, the draft, some of the limited experience did evoke a bit of Welcome to Wraith, which I have nostalgia for. But in terms of like what I like about Flesh and Blood, what I like about Flesh and Blood is how it breaks the mold of other card games. And I find that some of the more asymmetric game plans really do that for me, right? And I think that these heroes look super awesome, like super fun.
Well said.
All right. See y'all next week.